Okay, so March 13, 2014, VIHE in Vrindavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.33. So we can read this together. This, I think, was just one verse. We can sing it. Everybody on 33? Ready? Almost ready. All right, 2.9.33. This is the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam. This is the four verses. Yes, we do have the summary of the... Did you already give that summary to everybody yesterday? Okay. All right, everybody ready?
Yes.
Aham eva sameva gre nanyadyat sadasat param pascharaham tadyajja yovasishyeta somsmiham. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. I'd like to apologize to Shakti Swarupini that I've been confused about what I told her to do. So sometimes I've asked her if she's done something. She's done everything right. The only person who's made any mistakes is me. So I want to publicly apologize for any time that I said, didn't you do that for everybody? And she said, you didn't ask me to do it for everybody. So... She's done everything perfectly. You got this paper yesterday, right? This is one page. This is just a reference material, just like the what you got for two, the story form of chapter 9 and chapter 10. So this is, I'm not going to be referring to this in the class. This is for your, this is a study aid for you. So, this verse says, everything's only Krishna. Before creation, there's only Krishna. Now, there's only Krishna. And afterwards, there's only Krishna. So, we are told, what's the basic principle of bhakti? To do what?
To always remember Krishna, never forget.
Always remember Krishna, never forget it, yes. Alright. So, that may be a little difficult. You may find that a little difficult sometimes, especially if we're doing things in the world. We're going to school, we have a job, we have a family. But if we're honest, we'd have to say that even if you're living in a temple ashram, you may not always remember Krishna. Prabhupada was asked, is it easier to make advancement if you're in the temple? Prabhupada said, that depends on whether or not your mind is on a different subject matter. So many times people assume that if I just take my body and put it in the ashram, I'll remember Krishna every minute. And if I have a job, I won't. But in either case, one has to make some effort to always remember Krishna. And this is the question. Krishna's everything, and he's everywhere. But how do I remember him? It seems so easy to forget him. Really, until the stage of a shakti, our default value is to forget. Now, after nishta, you very easily remember again. Like Krishna says, 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, you immediately withdraw it and put it in the self. So in nishta and ruchi, that's very easy. Still requires some effort, but it's easy. But at a shakti, that becomes natural. One just naturally thinks about Krishna. So this is our big question with this verse, is how can we be conscious of Krishna? Krishna is everything. And how do we become conscious of Krishna? Now, the Krishna is everything doesn't mean that everything is Krishna the person. It's Krishna and his energy, Krishna and his impersonal. But these are all Krishna. This is our achintya beta beta tattva. And Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sabjite. We can say they're all Krishna. It's all Krishna, but it's not Krishna. But yet here in this verse, Krishna is emphasizing the oneness, that it is all Krishna. And of course, the main point, Prabhupada makes here in this verse is aham. Aham evasam evagre. Paschat aham yad etachcha. Aham, aham, that means I. And there is a person talking. Krishna is talking. And he's saying, I. This means that God is a person. We can say Krishna is everywhere in his energies. Krishna is everywhere in his impersonal feature. Mayate tamidam sarvam jagadavyakti murti matsani sarvabhuta ninacchaham nacchaham isvastita. But yet Krishna here is saying, aham, I. So this means that Krishna is the universe. Krishna is the universe. Krishna is also matter. Is it? Why is this verse going away from my brain? Bhumir apanalo vayukam mana buddhir eva cha. Ahankara. Bina prakriti. My separated energy. And then there's in the Brahma Samhita, Agnir Mahiga Ganamambu Marudu Shastha Kalasta Tatva Manasiti Jagatrayani Yasmad Bhavanti Vibhavanti Vishanti Yakta. That all of this is Krishna. Krishna is everything. Krishna is everything. Everything is Krishna. It's really a wonderful philosophy that Krishna's energy and Krishna are one. Most of the religions in the world, they have two different ideas, one of two. Either everything's God or nothing is God, except for God. We call this immanence and transcendence. So the religions that teach immanence, they just teach everything's God, God is everything. And the religions that teach transcendence, they say there's God and then there's the world, and that's separate. And a lot of the transcendent religions, how do they explain evil? They end up creating another, like, second god, a devil. That God and the devil are at war. It makes God sound almost like Indra, who's fighting with the demons, you know. Or Brahma, who has trouble with the demons, instead of Krishna. Like kind of Indra on one side and Maya Dhanava on the other side. Although Ravindra Suprabhu, he puts forward the explanation that the origin of the idea of the devil is Lord Shiva with his trident and his garland of skulls and being in charge of devils. But of course we know that Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. So he's the master of destruction, disease and insanity and destruction. But he's not a second god to Krishna as a competitor. He's an expansion of Krishna. Like milk and yogurt, Shira and Dadi. But both of these philosophies have a problem if you want to try to live by them. If you want to try to live by everything is God, if you have that philosophy, everything is God, God is everything, and then you try to live your life spiritually, you can't have a relationship with God. How, you can't offer anything to God. He's just everywhere. What do I do? I can't take this. This is God. I can't offer it to God. It's already God. I can't offer it to God. I have no way to have any kind of a personal relationship. The only thing I can do with that philosophy is just to exist. I can just sort of, okay, I'm God, you're God, we're all God, let's all just be God. We'll just be, you know. We are all God. That's a fact. There is a oneness. But what if that's all you have, then all you can do is just be. You can't do anything. What are you supposed to do? There is nothing to do. There's no relationship. There's no exchange. There's no action. There's just everything's being. Now, if you think that God is totally separate from the world, as I say, then you have this problem. First of all, you have a problem of evil. The world becomes evil. God is good, and the world is evil. So it's interesting, like in the Bible, it says God created the world and saw that it was good. But most people don't see like that. They see the world, you know, world is evil and God is good. Give up the world. So those are world-negating religions. So we see that people who are really serious Christians, at least formally, not so much anymore today, they would give up the world. They'd live in a monastery on the top of a mountain, and they eat just, you know, cabbage soup and bread. And some of them don't even speak, right? You had that video?
Yep. Great silence.
Of the people who did. They only on Sunday, right?
Yeah, once a week they speak.
Once a week they speak.
For 2 hours.
No, just not even the whole day.
Yeah, they go for a walk and they speak and then after that, that's it.
And they just stay in their little cells, right? All the monks, they stay in their little cells. Somebody just gives them a plate, silently gives them some food. Of course, they say their prayers out loud, right? They say their prayers out loud. As a group, you know, they have their... But they don't talk to each other at all. They don't even use sign language, do they?
There is a place in the morning, like post boxes where they leave messages related to services. But they don't speak... Like, this is just for practical maintenance of the ashram, but that's it.
So if the water pipe's broken or something like that. But they don't talk about their problems or their realizations or anything like
that. Only on Sunday for 2 hours.
And then they go out and play, don't they, on Sunday for 2 hours? I thought they were sledding or something.
They go to a forest for a walk, but when it's in winter, when it's snowing, then for these 2 hours they go and sled together.
Sled together.
Sledge.
So that's the problem when you have a transcendent religion. You have a transcendent religion, then you can't work in the world. You can't do anything. All you can do is you go away from the world, you stop everything, and you can pray and meditate, but you can't interact with the world. Our interaction with the world is evil.
Can you say that the way that is selfish?
Prahlad Maharaj says it's selfish. Prahlad Maharaj says, I don't want to be like the mystics who leave the world and just go and meditate. Of course, we do have in our Vaishnava culture Nirjana Bhajan, particularly at the end of life. No, we do have that. But that's a little different. I can explain why it's different in a moment. So you have these two opposite views, and people really struggle to live by them. They're not really livable. It doesn't. And so anyone who has these philosophies, you find they don't really live by their philosophy. Their life and their philosophy doesn't match. You know, then you'll find these Christians who say, well, the world really isn't evil. God really wants us to be rich and famous. And right? Because what are you going to do? Is everybody going to go to a cave and not speak? Everybody in the world is going to do that? No. How many people can live like that? I couldn't live like that. I could live like that for a day, a week, a month, but 20 years, 30 years? When I was 16, I was with a youth group. We took a ride by bicycle in the Rocky Mountains in Canada in the Jasper Banff National Park. Beautiful, beautiful place. And I remember we came to this glacial lake. It was you know what a glacier is? Ice, solid, huge, like an ice mountain. And the ice melts and it forms a lake. It's very, very pure water, very clear, very cold also. Very cold and very, very clean. So we took a boat and I went to a little island, just myself. I went in a boat to a little island and I was sitting there doing my own meditation. And I thought, oh, I could just stay here forever, just meditate alone on this island in the lake. And then after an hour, I thought, I don't want to stay here forever on an island in the middle of the lake. You know, I want to have friends. I want to do things. I don't want to just sit here. So people can't live like that. The religion ends up, you know, these people also the ones who say God is everywhere. Both of these kind of people end up living more or less materialistic lives. More or less. So we're saying God is everywhere, but he also has his form and activities. Because not only does Krishna say here, I am the only thing that exists during the universe. So during the universe, there's only me, there's nothing else. But he also says, I exist before the universe, and I exist after the universe. So this is where the acharyas say asameva. We have aham. Where is it?
Existed.
Asam and Eva. Yes. They say that this doesn't mean when you say I'm existing before the creation. So even if you're not doing the creation, you can be doing something else. It gives the example, if you say, right now the king's not doing anything. You mean he's not doing anything as the king, but he might be sleeping. He might be eating. He might be talking to his family. So when you say that before the creation, after the creation, this means that Krishna is doing spiritual activities. He has his spiritual form. So this one verse gives us this achintya bheda bheda tattva. Before the universe is only Krishna. After the universe is only Krishna. That means Krishna exists separately from the universe. And during the universe is only Krishna tells us that Krishna is the universe. So he is everything and he is also separate from everything. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, really emphasizes this aham means I. It means Krishna, the person. And I've always found it fascinating that although our philosophy is achintya bheda bheda tattva, we really emphasize, because nirvisesha sunyavadi, we really emphasize the difference more than the oneness. Because there's such this prevalence of this impersonalistic and voidist philosophy. But we have to have both. Because if Krishna is this paper, only then can I offer it to Krishna. Like Prabhupada says, you can only enter into fire if you're fire. I can't offer Krishna something that's material. If the paper isn't ultimately spiritual, I can't offer it to Krishna, can I? Won't work. But because the paper is Krishna's energy and ultimately it is Krishna, I can offer it to Krishna. And because Krishna is separate from the paper, I can offer it to Krishna. Because Krishna is the paper, I can offer it. And because Krishna is separate from the paper, I can offer it to Krishna. I couldn't offer Krishna something that's so intrinsically different from him that he couldn't accept it. You can think of it just like, if you're going to offer me food, you have to offer me food that I can digest. There has to be some similarity between the food and the constitution of my body. Like, you know, we talk about organic food. All food is organic. Of course, we mean organically grown. We really mean organically grown food. We mean food grown without chemicals. But when you just say this is organic, our bodies are organic, and therefore our bodies can only eat something that is also organic. Our bodies are not capable of digesting something that is inorganic. Do you all follow? Do you all understand what I'm saying? You know, our bodies are carbon-based. We have to eat things that are also carbon-based. Otherwise, we can't assimilate them. You know, if I just try to eat this plastic, I won't be able to digest it. It might even make me quite sick. So you have to offer to somebody something that is essentially the same nature as themselves. So you have to offer to Krishna Krishna's energy. If everything wasn't Krishna's energy, how could you offer it to him? You couldn't. There'd be no connection. But at the same time, that he's separate, that you can offer to him. So therefore, it's a very practical philosophy. It's a philosophy you can live. When I was, before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was looking exactly for that. I was looking for, where's a spiritual philosophy that I can live? You know, I didn't want to have some spiritual practice that was just, all right, you meditate for 15 minutes a day or 2 hours a day or whatever, and the rest of your life you're a materialist. I thought, I want to be spiritual when I'm in the store. I want to be spiritual when I'm brushing my teeth. I want to be in spiritual consciousness all the time. Not, okay, now I'm in material consciousness and now I'm in spiritual consciousness. And one of the two things that made me decide to join the Hare Krishna movement, one was Mangalarti, and the other one was the fact that you could be spiritual all day. That you didn't, it wasn't something that you just did sometimes. You know, most people, they're just materialists during the week and then on Friday or Saturday, Sunday, depending on their religion, then they do something spiritual. Or certain times, I was talking to this Muslim on the plane, very nice gentleman, really, very open. And he was talking about how they pray five times a day. But then how are you conscious the rest of the time? What do you do in between your prayer times? How do you use that in spiritual consciousness? So although Prabhupada's emphasizing the difference here and Krishna's transcendent nature, we should keep in mind that we do also accept oneness. That we don't only accept difference. We're not dualists. We're not saying that there's an absolute difference and that's it. We say there's an absolute difference and there's an absolute oneness. And that's extremely important. If we forget that there's an absolute oneness, we lose the connection. There's a wonderful article by a sociologist that you may remember, this Serbian Maharaja, that I use in my class on sociology of religion about secularism. Secularism is where you see the world devoid of a relationship with God and with the spiritual. So in most countries of the world today, we now have a secular government where the official policy of the government is that everything has to be separated from religion. And most people in the world, I think I can say most people, I don't know for sure, I haven't done a study of everyone in the world, but I think we can say that most people in the world, they have also a secular individual consciousness, where when people tell their own life story, they don't see their story through a spiritual lens. They're giving material explanations for their life story. Just like when there's some crisis, there's an earthquake, there's a terrorist attack. If anybody gets on the news and says, this is the will of God, everybody becomes very angry. You cannot say this. You cannot go on a news broadcast and say, this is karma or this is the will of God. That's not allowed. This is a secular society, and secular society means God is gone. You can't have Shastra Chakshus, you say. You see through the scripture. Secular means you see through the mind and logic and the senses. Well, the earthquake happened because tectonic forces gradually build up. But why do tectonic forces build up? What causes that? What causes lightning? You can say what lightning is, or lightning is electricity. But why is there lightning? Why does it hit this place and not others? Why does these two people work hard and one person is a millionaire and one person is poverty stricken? They don't give some explanation like that. So in order to give a spiritual explanation, one has to understand also this oneness. That this is Krishna's energy. Not just that Krishna is separate and that he made everything, but he's somewhere else. You know, Krishna's in Goloka, he doesn't know anything. Like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur asked the question, if Krishna's involved with his Rasalila and playing with the cowherd boys, how does he hear our prayers? Is it just super soul that hears our prayers? He says, no, Krishna's hearing. When you pray to Krishna, Krishna hears. How does he do that? It's not that he interrupts, it's not that he... It's not that he's dancing with the gopis and he says, whoops, phone call, sorry, just 1 minute. Down on that earth planet, you know. Mahalakshmi's calling me from the earth planet, I've got to take the call. One second, Lolita, just wait a minute. So, it's not... They don't have any mobiles. They don't have to say, okay, we're having Rasalila, turn off your mobiles. So Krishna is able to engage in his lila and at the same time be attentive to everybody in the material world. Why? Because he's here. Because it's not separate. He doesn't have to come here. You know, we can give a material analogy that like, okay, everything here is the energy of the government. It is. The Indian government is everywhere. How do you know that? Well, if you commit a crime, then they'll come, hopefully. In India, I don't know. Hopefully. If somebody gets murdered, then they come. But they have to come from one place to another. They have to move. And I don't know, these probably aren't very good examples in India, but in most of the world. So let's forget about India. Let's take America. So in America, how do you know the American government is everywhere? Because if you look at any building, the building is done to the government codes. Like there has to be an outlet, you know, a PowerPoint, an outlet where you plug in. You probably all call this something different. In Australia, they call them PowerPoints, where you plug something into the world. So in America, you have to have one at a certain distance. You have to have a certain number in the room. And there's the building has to be made of a certain structure. And everything has to be according to government codes. So you don't see the government in the room, but you know the government's there by that the government rules are followed. And if you shoot somebody, the government will be there immediately. Oh, this is, you're on any place in the government is government property. It may be your private house. You may own the house, but if you kill somebody in the house, the government is there. Oh, you've committed a crime on government property. Yes, belongs to everybody. But the government has to move. The police officer has to move from the police station to your house. But with Krishna, he doesn't have to move anywhere, like with Nrisingadev. He didn't have to like get on an airplane, you know, and come from Vaikuntha. He's there. He's already there. He's already there in the pillar. He's already there in the heart. So the Krishna is already there. He's everywhere. Everything is naturally connected with him because he's already there. Therefore, he can hear us. It's not that because Krishna's in Vrindavan, he has to have, you know, some long telephone wire or, right? They have this joke like that. Is it a local call? You've heard that joke. Is it a long distance call? But it's not a call at all. He's there locally for everybody. Right? So this is also important. This is something, because this determines how we use everything. If I just see this temple as matter, now this is the whole idea of meat eating. The people think, oh, they're just animals. Right? They're just animals. No, they're also Krishna. They're also Krishna. Not only are they souls, it's also Krishna. Krishna is the body of the animal. Krishna is the life. Krishna is everything. How I treat the cow, how I treat the squirrel, how I treat the table. How do I treat the wire? It's all Krishna. Prabhupada would say the person cleaning the temple floor and the person bathing the deity, they're equal. Krishna is also there as the marble on the floor. The Krishna and Krishna's energies are the same. So it's important to remember that and not, we are not simply dualists. We are a Chinchabeda Veda Tattva. And both needs to be there. Otherwise we become Kanista Adhikaris. Krishna's in the God's in the temple and he's not anyplace else. But God's also in the table. God's in my clothes and my shoes even and the floor and the dust and the trees and everything. And therefore one finds Krishna everywhere. Of course, to really realize this, one has to have love. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochana Santasa Daivavada Yashivakamjisan Yabasama Sundara Jinjivanasa. One sees Krishna everywhere. Like when Ramananda Roy said to Lord Chaitanya, I think you're Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya says, oh, you are an advanced devotee. You just see everybody's Krishna. All right. So having said that, please remember this. We're going to get back to this. Yes, we are. But now we're going to focus on Prabhupada's purport here and in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada's emphasis is on that Krishna is a person. Prabhupada is not emphasizing in these purports that Krishna is everywhere. That's not Prabhupada's emphasis here. Prabhupada's emphasis is that Krishna is a person. Prabhupada's emphasis is on the aham. Why? Because the world is full of impersonalists and voidless. Most of the spiritual people in the world are impersonalists and voidless. Okay, so Prabhupada says, aham logically, literally means I, it means Bhagavan. It cannot mean only Paramatma or Brahman. It must logically, grammatically, it must mean Bhagavan. And impersonalists may say, okay, then Vishnu and Brahma, they're both one. But there's also the I who's talking. He's not just saying we're all one. Brahma is listening to Vishnu. So you can still say there's two eyes. And when Krishna says, I existed when there was nothing but myself, the king has to have entourage. So even if Krishna says, only I was existing before and only I was existing afterwards, if he's existing as Ishwara, Prabhupada says, there must be followers. It's not logical to say, oh, I am the king and I was existing before this king. I must be existing with somebody. And then we can also say that he's always visible to the residents of Vaikuntha. So, well, even if we don't perceive Krishna, he's always visible during the creation, after the creation. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, he always adds these sort of things. He says, touching his forefinger to his chest, the Lord says, I alone existed before the creation. By the word Eva, he excludes all others. Nothing of my category existed at that time. The most attractive form which you now see, a sweet ocean of form and quality, existed before the creation at the time of the great devastation of all the universes. So both in this purport and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada gives a lot of evidence from the Shrutis that Krishna is supreme. That Vasudeva exists previous to the universe, Brahman Shiva did not exist, Purushoha Vain Narayana, the Lord is Narayana, that Narayana alone existed, and if you're of this particular bent, you could collect all these quotes and memorize them. Srila Prabhupada is providing. And of course, a lot of the quotes Prabhupada is providing, he's getting also from the Acharya's commentaries. So the Acharya's, many Acharya's, of course, have commented on these four verses. And he's pulling the quotes also from their commentaries. Okay. What I want to focus on is not so much how God is a person, because I think we all understand that God is a person. And yes, we don't have any problem with that. Anybody have a problem here with God as a person? Okay. Maybe difficult to explain. It may be. Actually, that's a good point. Okay, so we'll spend another few minutes on that before I go on to what I want to spend most of my class on. When I was sitting next to that Muslim, and he asked me, you know, what religion do you practice? And I said, Hare Krishna. And it was so nice. He said, Hare Krishna. Krishna? Krishna? Christian or Krishna? I said, Krishna. He kept chanting Krishna's name. And then he said, so who is Krishna? And I said, Krishna is God. I said, it's a name for God. He said, do you accept that Allah is God? I said, oh yes. And I said, but Krishna is a person. God is a person. He was shocked. God is a person? I said, well, not a person like me. But the supreme attractive. So it is difficult to explain that God is a person, because Krishna is not an ordinary person. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam. So Ananta Rupam can mean he has unlimited forms. It could also mean his form is unlimited. Like Mother Yasoda goes to tie him up and she can't, because his form is unlimited. Or he comes and shows the Virat Rupa, which we'll talk about more in chapter 10. And you've been studying a lot about the Virat Rupa already. You're going to get one more in the next chapter. There's three descriptions of the Virat Rupa in the second canto. So, he's everywhere, right? He's unlimited. He has a form, but his form is unlimited. And his form... it's not subject to any material laws. What's it? Without veins, pure and uncontaminated, without veins. Krishna doesn't have, you know, a stomach and a liver and a gallbladder and... Although he talks about his heart, he says, Hridayam Saksha. Interesting. Krishna talks about his heart. And of course, it's also interesting, Angani Yasya Sakalandriya Vichivanti, that Krishna can do any of the functions, actually, all liberated souls can do this. Then they can do the functions of any sense with any other sense. So Krishna can walk with his ear and eat with his eyes and eat with his feet and. Right. In this world, we're limited. Generally. At least in the earth body. Maybe on the higher planets, they're a little bit more unlimited. There are some exceptions. There's people who have something called synesthesia. Have you ever heard of that? Synesthesia. People who have synesthesia can see music. They can hear it and see it. Or different things. They have like a overlap of the senses. So it's considered a medical disease, but the people who have it, they like it. They don't want to get cured of it. What other things come into it? anyway, they have a mixture of the senses, so they may be able to feel sounds or taste colors. Some of them can taste colors. There was a very interesting, the former Soviet Union did a lot of paranormal research. They were trying to use it for military purposes. And there was one girl, one village girl in Russia, who could read through her skin. She could put her hand over a book and she could read with her through her skin.
She could scan.
Yeah. And they found, researchers found that they could train most people, not everyone, but most people they could train to do this. They ended up having a system. And they could train almost anyone to tell colors.
To tell?
Colors.
To differentiate.
To differentiate colors. Without even touch, the experiments they did is they would put a color under a piece of glass and people would touch the glass and say what color it was. And when they would say, how do you know? And they would give some description like, well, it's very sharp or it's very smooth or it has like sharp, even bumps. And they found that all the people would describe the same colors in the same way. So that was kind of interesting. So they could train people in that. But in the spiritual form, that's there completely, that you can see with your skin and you can hear with your nose and you're not limited by the form. You know, the nose has a form made to smell, but you're not limited to that form. Or you're reading the residents of Vaikuntha, remember how they can change their forms? You're looking at me like you really don't believe a word I'm saying. But you can look it up. It was experiments done in the USSR and you can research it yourself. Got this, we should photograph. The skeptic. She's like this. But in the spiritual form, everybody can do that. Right? Rereading in Vaikuntha, right? How they could change their forms. So the spiritual form is not ordinary. And I mean Krishna's form. Ekopya Sarachaitam Jagannandakoti Yat Chaktirasti Jagananda Chayat Anta. Andantarasta Paramanu Chayantarastam. I love talking about this because it's just so much fun. Okay, so you can try to make a mental picture of this. So first we have that all the universes are in Krishna's body. Everybody got that? Okay, can you get a picture of that? So here's Krishna's form. Mother Yasoda looks in his mouth and she sees all the universes. You can get that, right? Everybody can get that? Okay, now we're going to do another one. The other one is that Krishna is in every atom. So every atom is Krishna. Can you get that one? Okay, now let's put them together. Krishna is in every atom, and all the universes are in Krishna. And the universes have atoms, and in all those atoms there's Krishna. And in each Krishna there's all the universes. Can you do that? No. So that's God has a form, but it's a form like that. How do you get that? So I love it when Mother Yasoda, she sees herself inside Krishna's mouth. She doesn't see a picture of herself. She doesn't see a vision of herself. She sees herself. She doesn't see like a mirror. And Lord Brahma comments on this in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. He said, I am inside you, but yet we are speaking outside. So if all the universes are inside Krishna's belly, guess where we are right now? We're inside Krishna's belly. And yet Krishna's in my heart also. And he's in every atom. So that's not an ordinary form. And yet Krishna has a form. He has a form. And you know, he's giving, he loses and playing with the cowherd boys and they're taking rides on his shoulders. And Krishna, you know, we're dressing the deity of Krishna and you can measure his arm. And you can say, just like my arm, it has a, when you're an artist, you look at the line, the borders between things. So, you know, this is my arm and this is not my arm. But if you have the deity, that's Krishna, but that's Krishna too. So that's That's interesting about Krishna's form. All right, what I would like to... we can take a few minutes if anyone has any questions or comments, and then I want to go on to some fun meditations on this verse. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Anybody at all? Anybody, anybody, anybody? No? Okay. So some years ago, I was in London, and one of my god sisters there invited me to go swimming with her. So we went to a swimming pool, and because in London people don't usually swim in the ocean because it's too cold. So we were in the swimming pool and I'm swimming. And as I was swimming, I'm chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And somehow as I was swimming and chanting, and I was thinking, this water is soft, right? You can just push it, it's really soft. But yet it's so powerful. And I thought, oh, Krishna's like that too. He's really soft and delicate. It's explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We just touch him and he touches skin and he changes colors. And yet he's so strong. And from that day, I went back to the room after we went swimming. And I started writing all the ways in which water helped me meditate on Krishna. And I ended up writing 5 articles for Back to Godhead. One on earth, one on water, one on fire, one on air, and one on space. I never wrote one on mind, intelligence, and ego. And I have a plan, someday, maybe, after I finish I have 3 publishing projects that are first. After I finish my present publishing projects, or if Krishna somehow expands things in some way, he's good at that, is that I would like to produce a book of meditation on how we can meditate on Krishna in the world. How we can, by contacting Krishna's energy, remember that's Krishna. So I'm going to go through some of this, and then I'm going to ask all of us here to do our own little exercise of meditation based on Bhagavad Gita, which is why you brought your handy Bhagavad Gitas to this class. Okay, so I'm not going to do this in depth. Normally I spend an hour and a half. I want to spend just a half an hour. I'm going to do this quite briefly. If you're interested, I do have the articles in Back to Godhead, which you could refer to. So for each of the earth, water, fire, air, ether, I looked at the qualities of that element and how the qualities reminded me of Krishna. Then I also looked at Krishna's opulences. So for earth, I picked wealth. For water, I picked fame. For fire, I picked beauty. For air, I picked strength. For space, I picked... What would I pick for space? Krishna compares space to this opulence in the Bhagavad Gita. You guys weren't listening. You were not listening. You were all spaced out. Come on. Okay, everybody stand up. Stretch. Everybody stand up. Stretch, try to touch the ceiling. Whoa! Come on, touch that ceiling! Whoa! Touch the floor. All right, sit down. Now, let's try this again. Okay, Krishna has 6 opulences.
Now you're being too very fast. Too.
Krishna has 6 opulences. Right? Wealth, strength, fame,
beauty,
knowledge, renunciation. Okay. And there's 5 elements. 5 gross elements, 3 subtle. What element would you match with strength?
Earth.
Fire.
You could do any of them, but which do you think would fit the best?
Air.
Air. Why air?
Because wind is strong.
Hmm? Wind is strong. Who are the really strong devotees?
Bhima.
Bhima and?
Yamaraj.
Hanuman, both sons of the
wind.
So I put air with strength. Okay, which would you put with beauty?
Fire.
Yes, why?
Effulgence.
Power.
Long twice said beauty.
Forms, heat, beautiful form.
Beautiful form, yes. Fire is associated with form. Okay, which would you put with renunciation? Krishna does this in the Bhagavad Gita. Sky. Krishna puts renunciation with the sky. The sky doesn't mix with anything. It's very renounced. Okay, what do we have left? Wealth. What would you put with wealth?
Earth.
Why?
Because it produces so many things.
Yes, pretty much. All wealth comes from the earth, doesn't it? Except for pearls come from the water, but a few things come from water, but almost all of our wealth comes from the earth. Almost anything we consider wealth comes from the earth. Okay, what do we have left? Fame. I put fame with water. I thought about that the places on the earth that are very famous are often water. And then knowledge, of course, you have to put with the subtle ones, the mind, intelligence, and ego. All right? So then I wanted to match. So that was Krishna's opulence. Then I also thought about, okay, what would I focus on? Could focus on Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's abode. So, I focus with earth on Krishna's abode, that earth could remind me of Krishna's own abode. With fire, of course, on Krishna's form. Fire reminding me of Krishna's beauty and also Krishna's form. Focuses that I have. Oh, water, I focused on Leela because Krishna has so many Leelas in relation to water. And also people, when they want to have fun, they go to places with water, usually. Or snow sometimes. So the vacation places are usually associated with water. Okay, let's look at pastimes. What pastimes does Krishna have related to space?
Trinavarta.
Okay, I'd say that's more air than space.
Vyomasura,
who could fly in the sky. Okay. Vamana, who went through space. Okay. When they went with Arjuna to Mahavishnu. Space doesn't just mean outer space, it means space, where things are. What other leelas related to space? Oh, in space I associate with Krishna's name. So fire with Krishna's form, space with Krishna's name, water with Krishna's pastimes, earth with Krishna's abode. Mind, I associate with Krishna's devotees. Mind, intelligence, we go with devotees. Any other pastimes with space? I just talked about the universal form in Krishna's mouth, right? That's space.
Virat Rupa,
what else? What about when Krishna looks at all the cowherd boys at one time? The cowherd boys are sitting in a circle around Krishna, and Krishna can see all of them at the same time.
Then in Vasalyu, he can dance with
Vasalyu. Those are all space. Those are all pastimes related to space. When all the Lord Brahmas came to see Krishna, and they all thought Krishna's only in my universe, that's space. Okay, what about some pastimes related to air? There's Trinavarta. Okay, the wind demon. What other pastimes related to air?
When he plays the flute.
Plays the flute, yes. What else? Lifting Govardhan down into the air. Oh, I like that.
When he crashes the trees, Arjuna trees.
He crashes them through the air and they make a big noise? What about Hayagriva breathing out the Vedas?
Well, when he swallows the fire.
That's fire. Breathing out universes? Does he breathe out universes? What about flying through the air on Garuda? Garuda's wings are flapping out the Vedas. Okay, fire. Pastimes related to fire. Swallowing the forest fire. There's two forest fires. What else? The fire devastation. Okay, fire comes out of the mouth of Anantastasia. What else with fire? Oh, I like that. The fire digestion. Yes.
If you're related to beauty, then Mohini Murti.
Mohini Murti, okay. Fire, come on, some more fire. Krishna does a fire dance. When he's dancing on
Kali,
yeah, there's fire coming out of his mouth, out of Kali's mouth. What about the battle? It was a battle where Krishna had to fight with a fire demon, and he got an ice demon. Krishna created an ice, not a demon. Krishna gave an ice weapon to fight with the fire demon. What battle was that?
Sita Jara
and Narayana Jara. And that was, whose battle were they fighting? They were fighting, who started this whole thing? Manasura, okay. What about Yajna? Is fire the mouth of the Lord? Okay. Pastimes related to water. We've got lots and 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 lots of them. Huh? With the gopis, so many with the gopis. Gopis and Radhakund gopis and the Jamuna. Stealing the gopis' clothes in the water.
Kusum Sarovara,
the boat lila at Manasaganga. So many. Krishna goes swimming a lot every day, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
He takes lots of baths and swimming every day. Right? Mother Yasoda gives him one bath in the morning and one in the afternoon. Then he swims in the Jamuna in the middle of the night. He swims at Radhakund in the middle of the day. And he swims at least four times every day, Krishna's going swimming. Okay. What other with water?
Kali.
Kali also with water. Some more?
Gajendra.
Oh, Gajendra. Oh, very nice. Who was in the water? Very nice. Oh, you guys are great.
What?
He went to Varuna Loka, went to the Jamuna to save Nanda Maharaj. Oh, this is great. Okay, some more. You're just sitting there like this? Come on, give me some. You haven't told me any. Come on. Varaha. Okay, he goes into the water. Somebody, something else? Mahavishnu. Right? Yeah, Karan, Arana, Vajalay, Bhakti, Jee, Swami, Vajalay. Huh?
Shankachuna, killing demon.
Shankachuna, swimming in water? Did he go in the water?
Yeah, they're bringing their rocks.
He's a conch shell.
Oh, when he went to get the conch shell.
Yeah.
That's right.
Getting back to some of his mask.
Oh, when he went to the water, right, to look for...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. Oh, when he went to save the Vedas.
So he went to find in the ocean.
Right, when he went to find the ocean to find Sanikwanamuni's son, yes. Some more. God, you're missing a big one. What? Oh, Purva. Of course, that is interesting. That's also liquid that's in the ocean of milk. That'll count because it's a liquid. And water really means any liquid, so that was in the ocean of milk.
But, Ramachandra.
Ramachandra, who went over the ocean. Wow. Huh? Braha, yes. Okay, another one.
Balaram pulled the Yamuna.
Oh! Wow! Balaram pulling the Yamuna. Okay, more. Come on, give me one with water. Water's so easy.
When he invited all the rivers to become his queen.
Oh, when he invited all the rivers to become his queen. Very nice.
And he showed all this Guruga in the Yamuna.
A Gurgat. Oh, when Krishna showed his universal form in the Yamuna. We're still missing some big ones. Nobody said Matsya. Oh, he said, I didn't hear. I'm sorry, my fault. Okay.
Kurma,
okay.
And
Gauranga
Mahaprabhu, he was a child playing in the Ganga.
Okay.
In the Brahman.
Naughty Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Okay. And Earth.
Earth. That's Govardhan.
Govardhan! I'm like, just look behind you. So there's Govardhan.
Prithumaraj running after Earth.
Huh? Prithumaraj. Okay, running after the Earth. Nice. What else with the Earth? Footprints, Krishna's footprints on the earth.
Radharani appeared from the earth.
Huh?
Shrimati Radharani appearing from the earth.
Radharani appeared from the earth and Sita went into the earth.
Baby Krishna eating earth.
Baby Krishna eating dirt and Nimai also ate dirt. Yes, okay.
And also the Leela with the clay pots with Mother.
Oh, the dirt pots also, okay. And then Varaha again. Varaha with the water and then with the earth. So, look at what we can do, okay? We talk about we drink water, you can remember that Krishna's a taste of water. But you can also remember all of Krishna's pastimes in relation to water. When you're walking on the earth, you can remember Krishna's pastimes in relation to the earth. When we feel the heat of the sun or the heat in our body, you can remember Krishna's pastimes related to fire. When we're breathing air, you can remember Krishna's pastimes related to the air. When we're always in space, we can remember Krishna's pastimes in relationship to space. All right, now we're going to look at the qualities of each of these elements and how the qualities of each of these elements can remind us of Krishna. Okay, what are some of the qualities of earth? Tell me a quality of earth.
Fragrance.
Okay, the Krishna says he's a fragrance of the earth. What other qualities? So anything we smell. Anything we smell reminds us of Krishna. Give me some other qualities of earth.
Forbearing.
Okay, patient. Krishna is very forbearing. He's very patient. Another quality of the earth.
Mixes with, accepts water and contains.
Accepts, okay. So that Krishna accepts what we give him. Some other quality of earth.
Creative.
Yes. Practically all creative endeavors involve using earth. If you're going to paint, you're getting the minerals from the earth. You're going to sculpt, you're going to make something out of earth. And this reminds us, whenever we see anything creative, whenever we do anything creative, we can remember how creative Krishna is. Something else about earth.
Tolerance.
Yes. How tolerant Krishna is of all of us. Okay. Something else about earth.
Bountiful.
Okay, they're just giving so much. How Krishna is giving to everyone. Okay, I also thought about how the earth is very dependable. It's one of Krishna's qualities. He's very dependable. We don't think every morning, is the earth going to hold me up or not? Our shelter, all of our shelters come from the earth. Everything we consider a home, Krishna is our shelter. How attached we are to our homeland. I'm on Facebook, and if I say anything negative about any country in the world, a lot of people get very upset. You know, like I said, all the other night, people were singing, making this loud noise on the Parikram path till late at night. I said, that's India. And somebody, why are you criticizing India? Ah! So So whatever our homeland is, that we be, we're very attached. Whatever it is, even if your homeland is like, you know, it's a little teeny tiny country that nobody knows what it is. It's my homeland. And so how attached we can be to just a little piece of the earth, which is a little tiny piece of Krishna's energy, how attached could we be to Krishna? If we can have this much attachment to a piece of the earth, people will die for their homeland, won't they? They'll fight, they'll kill, they'll die, they'll defend for their homeland, to be that attached to Krishna. That is our the origin and the resting place of our bodies, like Krishna is our origin and resting place. All right, some qualities of fire, of water, rather, are also all we talked about, was both soft and strong. Someone else who hasn't said much. What's a quality of water? Give me a quality of water. It doesn't have a set form, right? It can take a variety of forms according to the container. So Krishna also has unlimited forms. And Kapila Dev says that Krishna will appear in whatever form the devotee worships him. So another quality of water. Someone else. Tell me something else about water.
Yes.
It has it. Water is what arranges for all of our pleasure. Any pleasure we have is related to water. If you dry your tongue, you can't taste anything anymore. If your nose is all dried out, you can't smell. If there's no wax in your ear, you can't hear. If there's no oil on your skin, you can't. Nothing will feel good. If there's no water in your tongue, you can't see. So all the rasas are coming from water, and Krishna says, "I am that rasa. I am whatever pleasure we experience." Even like Prabhupada said, the person drinking alcohol can remember, this taste is Krishna. Yes? Whatever pleasure. By the way, this is a little secret. Okay? This is, don't tell anybody. If we're struggling with some not very nice pleasure in this world, some not very nice sense gratification, if there's something we're attached to that we know is not, that we're supposed to give up, and we're attached to it, one way you can get rid of it is to meditate that the pleasure that you're getting out of it is actually Krishna. Now, I find that devotees don't want to do that. They're thinking, no, I should hate it. If I'm secretly, you know, if I have, okay, here's my Krishna conscious life, and then I have this little secret. Get it out and connect it with Krishna. We're going to talk about this more tomorrow. What is Maya? Connect it with Krishna. You think, well, if I connect it with Krishna, won't that give me permission to keep doing it? No, that's not how it'll work. Prabhupada didn't say if the people drinking see Krishna as the taste of their alcohol, they'll be more attached to their alcohol. That's not what he said. He said if they do that, they'll become a saint person. If we take our whatever sense gratification we have, do we all have some sense gratification? Thank you. So if we take whatever sense gratification we have, and you see the pleasure we're getting from that is actually Krishna, at a certain point, you'll think, why don't I just get Krishna? Why am I taking this little teeny tiny fraction of pleasure in a way Krishna doesn't want me to take it? Why don't, if I'm getting some pleasure, why I could get 100 million times more pleasure if I went to the reservoir. Does this make sense? This works much better than trying to either pretend you don't have the problem or to keep seeing it as separate from Krishna. If you connect it with Krishna, it's much easier to give it up. You'll say, well, why don't I just get the real thing? Why am I getting this false thing? Yes?
We are doing these things because we want to have our independence, our false independence, or our mind. That's why we're doing this. Not that it's much pleasure, but just because I have freedom to do.
You got the reason why what I'm telling you works. Because the pleasure we're getting out of these things is really very, very small. The amount of pleasure you can get from anything that you separate from Krishna is practically speaking insignificant. The only pleasure you get out of it is a real tamaguna pleasure, that I'm doing something separate from Krishna. That's really the rasa that you're getting in this. And so as soon as you connect it with Krishna, that goes away. Yes, you've understood the psychology of why it works. Once you reconnect it with Krishna, it'll lose its attraction. And the more you try to keep it separate from Krishna, the higher its attraction will have for you. So this is one, it's another one of those many, 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 many counterintuitive things. You know, that sacrifice is where you find the greatest joy. That trying to get joy without sacrifice is all misery. And as soon as you get your joy in sacrifice, it gives you unlimited joy. So if we have something that we're attached to, as long as we keep it separate from Krishna, we'll have a very hard time giving it up. And as soon as you connect it with Krishna, you say, how can I connect sinful things with Krishna? You can, because Krishna is the pleasure element in them. As soon as you connect it with Krishna, then the interest in it will go away very, very quickly. Yes. That's, and you've understood. I don't like to tell people the psychology because then they won't do it. But that's the... Yes, you've understood what is the psychology behind it.
Yes, I try to see myself.
Yes, yes. Another way you can understand it, and Srila Prabhupada explains it this way many times in connection with the nectar devotion, that there's 12 rasas. Right, there's 5 primary and there's 7 secondary rasas. What are the 7 secondary rasas, all of you bhakti shastris?
Fear, wonder,
chivalry, joking or joy comedy. We said that, hasya, joking.
Devastation.
Devastation, disgust. Huh? Anger. Did we say fear already? Fear. Okay, so those are the 7 secondary rasas. And everything, Prabhupada says, everything we're doing, we're trying to enjoy one of those rasas. Whatever we're doing, you can also try to enjoy anger. By the way, when people try to repress lust, they end up being angry, and you can enjoy anger. And I have seen devotees go for 10 or 20 years trying to get their rasa from anger. That's a rasa. Or disgust. Sometimes people end up enjoying disgust. Oh, material energy is so disgusting. It's horrible. It's just... We get these articles for Back to Godhead like that sometimes, you know. Just the material world is disgusting. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. So another way you can deal with material attachments is... And this requires... Should I tell you this? It requires honesty and humility. Because usually we don't say that we don't want to admit that we're enjoying the things that are separate from Krishna. Okay? We don't want to admit that we're enjoying them. We just want to say they're all bad and I'm all evil. And admit that you're enjoying it, okay? Okay? The reason I'm criticizing devotees is I'm enjoying it. If I wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't do it. That's what Prabhupada says. I'm not saying it. He says everything we're doing, we're looking for some rasa. So, okay, what rasa am I looking in? Why do I criticize devotees? What rasa? What rasa could I be getting? What rasa? No, rasa, rasa. One of the 7 rasas.
Chivalry?
I could be getting chivalry. Yes, what else?
Anger.
And maybe disgust. Look at that disgusting thing that devotee did. Oh, can you believe they did something so disgusting? So it could be that. Now, when you admit that that's what you're trying to enjoy, you immediately feel what? Detached. Yes, you feel like you feel full. And you immediately feel detached. Do you follow this? See, when you look at your material attachments and you just say, this is bad, I shouldn't have this attachment, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad, I should stop, I should stop, I should stop. It just doesn't go away. Have you found this? Look at it and see Krishna in it. See Krishna. We'll talk about this more tomorrow. What rasa am I looking for? What rasa am I looking for? And as soon as you see that, you say, that's really foolish. Why am I trying to enjoy chivalry and anger and disgust by criticizing devotees? Why don't I try to enjoy chivalry by meditating on, you know, the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna fighting with the demons, and why don't I get angry at Kamsa, the cow slaughterers, and why don't I get disgusted at Nisingadeva's intestinal garden? Prabhupada says, if you want to enjoy disgust, meditate on Nisingadeva. Okay. All right, this all came from our talking about the quality of water. Ah, we got back to our topic. Thank you, Krishna. So, some more qualities of water.
Cleaning.
And Krishna is pavitra. He's the most clean, he's the most pure. Whenever we bathe, whenever we rinse out our mouth, we can remember how Krishna is the purest. Another quality of water.
Satisfying.
How satisfying Krishna is. Yes?
Sound.
Water is very musical. Actually, when Krishna went into Kali's lake, the acharyas say he was making music and when he was splashing the water. Very strong, yes. One big wave can demolish everything, like Krishna, just one glance, everything finished. What else?
Cooling.
Huh? Cooling. Right? And Krishna just relieves the fire of material desires. Okay, very graceful. Water is very graceful, like Krishna is very graceful. I'll say some qualities of fire. Let's look separately, heat and light. Qualities of heat. It burns. The Krishna burns up all of our sins and all of our material desires. Heat, warmth is very pleasurable. Yes, we talk about a warm embrace, right? Some friend gives you a warm embrace. So warmth is very associated with love, with life. Something is alive, it's warm. And Krishna, he says, I am the heat and fire. And the life of all that lives. Whenever we feel something warm, we can think how loving Krishna is. Something else about fire?
It removes coldness. I mean, it removes that coldness, so to say. No, but one thing is to heat something, and the other thing is to remove the misery.
Oh, okay, so it takes away the there was one scientist who said, the whole universe is a cold, impersonal machine.
Yes.
Right?
Purifies.
Purifies, yes.
Gives light.
Well, not the light yet, we're out of heat. That's going to stay with heat. Anything else with heat? Here's some other qualities of heat.
Related to digestion?
Oh, related to cooking? What does heat do in cooking? What does it do? What does it mean to cook? What is cooking? What do we mean by cooking?
Make the food pleasurable.
Okay, it increases the pleasure. Does it change the structure and the texture of the food?
Yes.
And Krishna can also change the structure and the texture of our heart. And you know how heat does this to the food? What does heat do to the food that makes it change?
Melts.
Well, it could melt. Okay, Krishna's melting our heart. What else does heat do to the food? Do you know? Little science here. It makes all of the molecules start dancing around. It gets all the molecules, like if you put water on fire, you see, they start dancing and jumping out of the pot, the steam. So it excites, basically heat is exciting all the molecules, they're all getting excited. So just like that, you know, whenever we're cooking, we can remember how the devotees start dancing in the kirtan. Krishna excites everybody. Okay, now let's go to light from fire, some qualities of light. Illuminates. So Krishna says, Gyana Dipena Bhashvata. And Krishna says specifically, I am the light in all luminous objects. So the light in that lamp, the light of the sun, the light of Krishna specifically says, I am the light of the sun, I am the light of the moon, I am the light in all luminous objects. The light from your phone screen is Krishna. The light from your computer screen is Krishna. The light in the light bulb is Krishna. Okay. What else? Something else with light. Huh?
Radiance.
That Krishna is effulgent. Okay, something else.
The colors.
Colors. The light gives us all colors. And Krishna is very colorful. Yes, his holy pastime is colorful.
Vision.
Pastime?
Vision.
Vision allows us to see. That Krishna allows us to see, to understand, knowledge. Lights are associated with festivals. And every culture of the world has some festivals related to light. The spiritual world is always a festival. Diwali, yes. Says in the story of Lord Varaha in the Bhagavatam, every day in the spiritual world is a festival. Also, we use lights to welcome guests. We can remember how Krishna is always welcoming us back to the spiritual world. There's more. I'm just going through this quickly. Okay, what are some of the qualities of air? Strength again, yes. Yes, it carries the fragrance. And Krishna says he's like that. Like the air is carrying the aroma, so Krishna's carrying our desires from one life to another. What else with air?
Transportation.
Transportation, yes. Krishna's moving us all over the universe. And the air is so strong, it can carry things that appear to be more substantial than itself. You know, a strong windstorm can carry trees and cars. And so Krishna's very subtle, but he can move apparently gross things. Huh? Yes, very life. Krishna says that. He says, I join with the air of life, with the incoming and outgoing breath. So why don't we do that for a minute? We'll breathe. And that is Krishna. All right. Also with the air, it makes the trees dance. That reminds us of Krishna's dancing. It makes patterns in the sand, in the rock. You can think of the patterns of Krishna's dancing. And it's our most basic physiological need. So if you had a big festival, really nice prasadam, all your favorite friends, wonderful music playing, flowers everywhere. What else? Everyone wearing beautiful clothes, the table and the chairs all hand-carved with silk cushions, gold plates. What else? Beautiful day, not too hot, not too cold, but there was no air. So without Krishna, everything's useless. You don't have air, everything's useless. Finish. Without Krishna, it's the most essential physiological mark, both are the biggest need. And air is only visible by its effects. How do we know there's air here? I don't see it, I know. Where is it? But I'm breathing it, and if it blows, it moves things. So Krishna's everywhere, but we can't access him directly. We can only access him by his effects. And even there's air pressure, right? There's air pressing. I don't know in kilograms, but 14 pounds of pressure per square inch. But we're unaware of it. So in the same way, Krishna's everywhere, although we're unaware.
So invisible, so
invisible. Invisible, yes. Okay, now space. What are the qualities of space?
It's expensive.
It's expensive.
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 Oh, expansive. It's also expensive. That was good.
Without limit.
Without limit, that Krishna has no limit.
Overbating.
All-pervading, like Krishna is everywhere. But space is perceived very differently according to your level of consciousness. Some little ant on the windowsill, it perceives this room very differently than we do. A baby, before they can crawl, if you walk out of the room, they think you're dropped into another dimension. You know, if you're in a house and a baby, you can't move, you go from one room to the other, the baby will cry. Now you're gone. The baby has no understanding of. So Krishna is also perceived differently according to our level of consciousness. Space is usually completely out of our awareness. We do not generally think about space at all. So most materialistic people don't think about Krishna at all. When there's big, expansive space, we get a feeling of what?
Freedom.
Krishna gives freedom. The shelter for everything, yes. And it defines everything. You know when I figured that out? I figured that out, for about 7 years, I had no home. Gopi Pranaganda Prabhu said, you're a Parivrajak. I said, yeah, I'm not Acharya, but I'm a Parivrajak. So I had no home, I had no base. And people would ask me, everywhere I went, strangers, friends, devotees, non-devotees, I found out that the first question that anybody asks anybody, and it's allowed to ask anybody, is where are you from or where do you live? And recently I just read this also. There was a study. What is the next thing that people say after hello? In every culture in the world is where do you live or where are you from? And you can ask that question to anybody. You don't have to have any relationship with them. Other questions, are you married? What do you do? How old are you? Where did you go to school? That you have to have some permission. But where are you from? You can ask anybody. And I never noticed that question before. I never noticed it. And then when I didn't have any answer, then I noticed it. You know, where do you live? I don't live anywhere. And people would, they would be completely off balance. They would, some of them would just be sort of shocked. They didn't know what do they say next. They couldn't understand this. And some people, one or two out of every 10 people, they just wouldn't accept my answer. They'd say, no, where do you stay? I said, I don't. I'm always traveling. And they said, well, when you're not traveling, where do you stay? I said, but I'm always traveling. And then they say, well, where do you spend the most time? I say, which month? You know, they thought if they somehow asked the question a little differently, then they would get an answer, and they just couldn't. And I was thinking, first of all, why is this the first question? And second of all, why, if you don't have an answer, is it so difficult? I realized because in order to understand something, you first have to know where it goes. What is its place? We can't understand something that has no place. You have to have, where does it relate to the whole? Where does it fit in space? In the same way, nothing has any meaning unless you know how does it fit with Krishna. If you don't know how it fits with Krishna, you can't go to the next step. You can't do something with it. You always have to know where does it fit with Krishna. So space defines everything. Whatever there is defined by space. So everything is defined by Krishna. And space is the first element. Everything comes from space. From space comes air, from air comes fire, from fire comes water, from water comes earth. So everything comes from space. All right, this is just a little idea of how we can understand Rama. It is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation when it was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. So this is a little idea of how we can really meditate. And Srila Prabhupada would say so many times, if you want to see God the way he's recommending. I am the light of the sun. I am the heat and fire. And here we are in the second canto. Three times in the second canto, universal form. Three times. Why? Because that's our consciousness. That's our consciousness. Even my dear friends, when we attain the state of bhava, and some of you are already in the state of bhava, you can confirm this, that we will be seeing Krishna's pastimes televised in our heart, but we will also be aware that everything is Krishna. One in the state of bhava is aware not only that Krishna's dancing with the gopis and playing ball with the cowherd boys and being fed by Mother Yasoda, but they're also aware of how Krishna is the wall and the floor and the sky. Okay, we're going to use the remainder of the time. You have your Bhagavad Gita, yes? Where in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna talk about how you can see him in the material world? Which chapters?
Seven.
And?
Ten.
And? Nine. And? One more. No.
11 chapters.
Well, sort of. Sort of 11. But where he says, I am, I am, I am, I am this, I am that. 7, 9, 10, and? 15. 7, 9, 10, 15. 7, 9, 10, 15. 7, 9, 10, 15. Okay, so you have 22 minutes. You can decide if you want to use 7, 9, 10, 15. Pick at least one from 7, 9, 10, 15. Actually, first what I'd like you to do is why don't we take, actually, I'm going to change this a little bit. Right now, or 11, but 11 doesn't work so well. Let's just take 2-3 minutes and list as many as you can from memory. Let's just go around from memory without looking. I'm just going to go around the room. Just tell me anything that you can remember from 7, 9, 10, or 15 where Krishna says,
taste,
I am.
Taste.
Taste of what?
The light of the sun.
I'm going in order, and you're jumping out of order. Bad, bad, bad Spanish Mahalakshmi, who's just so enthusiastic that you just can't wait to... So I'm going to stand up so you can know in order. Okay. Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm quick. I'm from New York.
Quick
people.
Yes. We'll come back to you. Yes. One of the ways Krishna says we can remember him. Smell the earth. Sun and the moon.
The
banyan tree. Of trees, I am the banyan. Of secrets, I'm silence.
Strength
of
the strong.
Strength of the strong. Of yajna and japa. Now you can finally get to it. She's one of my favorite people. I can pick on you a little bit, right? And you want to hate me?
No.
Okay. So tell me one. We'll come back to you. You were so enthusiastic. Now you've forgotten everything.
Of the mind.
Huh?
Mind.
Of senses, I am the mind.
Himalayas.
Of immovable, is that immovable?
Immovable.
Immovable things, I am the Himalayas.
Ability in man.
Ability in man. That's one you can remember all the time.
Intelligence.
Intelligence of the intelligent.
All the humans, I am the king.
Of all the humans, I am the king. Have you thought of one?
Vedas.
Vedas, yes. And? I'm sorry, I scared you. I'm so sorry. Okay, very good. So please go through, pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 maximum, and start with one and all the ways in which you could use that in your life as a meditation. Pick one you can use as your meditation. Don't pick of departed ancestors, I am Aryama. Okay? Because I don't think that's gonna help your meditation. But it could be, you know, of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. Anything that could help you to remember Krishna, that Krishna is in the world. And then write down whatever ways how you can remember by the qualities, by the opulences, right? We were looking at the elements. We looked at qualities, wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation. We looked at leelas, and we looked at qualities. Okay, so pick at least one and do as much as you can. If you run out for one, you can do two. I don't think you'll have time to do more than 5. All right, and then we're going to stop at 2:25, and I'm going to ask everyone to say something. So please be aware, be prepared to say something, and I'm going to ask in order. So go around the room, but I'll probably go in a different order. Okay? Is that all right with everybody?